107.5 FM, W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The Fed board signaling an interest rate cut is soon on the way.
In a key speech at the Jackson Hole Economic Summit, Fed Chair Jerome Powell signaling that the Federal Reserve is ready to cut interest rates for the first time in over 4 years.
The time has come for policy to adjust.
Hinting at a likely rate cut in September, he emphasized that future cuts will depend on economic data as the job market shows signs of cooling. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The Secret Service confirming five agents have been put on administrative leave in the wake of the assassination attempt of Donald Trump at the July rally in Pennsylvania. Today, the former president is campaigning in Arizona. Independent candidate RFK Jr. also in Arizona and is expected to suspend his campaign and endorse Trump. After accepting the nomination and closing out the Democratic National Convention, Vice President Kamala Harris has closed-door briefings today. No public schedule. Stocks are higher after word of the Fed's upcoming interest rate cut. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell in Chicago. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Democratic National Convention is over. Now, what's next?
The next thing that happens is that moments from this convention turn into viral videos, turn into ads that are run on TV. People will be reminded of the highs of this convention all the way through the time the polls close.
Wisconsin Democratic Chair Ben Wickler says the hard work of knocking on doors and getting out the vote ramps up in earnest. Four hotel security guards charged with killing a man in downtown Milwaukee this summer are pleading not guilty. Todd Erickson, Brandon Turner, Herbert Williamson, and Devin Johnson Carson were in court yesterday. They face felony murder charges in the death of Devontae Mitchell. Prosecutors say they held Mitchell down and suffocated him. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. University of Minnesota Duluth officials are sharing an update on the renovation project of their main production kitchen. According to a Fox 21 report, the remodel is still right on schedule and should not have an effect on students. The university is working out of professional food trailers to meet the dining needs of students while the renovations are underway. Kitchen staff are also using the remodel as an opportunity to experiment with some edits to their recipes. University officials expect the kitchen should be completed by early 2025. The city of Cloquet is looking for help from the community after graffiti was found near a popular park. According to a Northern News Now report, the damage occurred on the ATV trail and bridge near Spafford Park and on the walking path north of the St. Louis River. Law enforcement authorities believe the graffiti damage was done sometime between Sunday and Tuesday. As city officials work to clean up the affected areas, law enforcement authorities are looking for any information on potential suspects from the community. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers break camp. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers had their final training camp practice in a joint session with the Baltimore Ravens. Jordan Love made some nice completions, but was also intercepted.
They're a really good defense. I mean, I think they ended the last year one of the best in the league. So they're really good, and it's a great test for us on offense. And obviously, I mean, I think after last week at Denver practice, you know, it wasn't our best performance. So we definitely wanted to bounce back. And I think, you know, we did a good job of doing that.
The two teams face each other tomorrow at noon for their final preseason game at Lambeau Field. Baseball tonight, the Brewers in Oakland to face the A's. The Crew losing to the Cardinals yesterday, 3-0 in St. Louis. Pat Murphy asked why he pulled Freddy Peralta after five scoreless innings pitched.
He threw a good breaking ball. He just missed with it a lot. I thought he was good. Five innings of shutout. Only two hits, I think, and you can say what you want. The pitch count got up there, and I'm not interested in him keep going 100-plus when, you know, he's got a lot of big starts left.
Mets Brewers manager Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Scattered showers and a few thunderstorms are still expected to track across the area today. Staying stuck under mostly cloudy skies, high temperatures will still be pleasant in the upper 70s. Otherwise, a mostly sunny, hot, and humid weekend ahead. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 65.
Saving money on your roofing project now at Menard. sheets. We have an unbeatable selection of Atlas shingles. Castlebrook, Briarwood, and Pinnacle shingles feature a limited lifetime and up to 130 miles per hour wind warranty. Choose from 20 styles in stock, ready to take home today. Stop in to shop our wide selection of roofing products or visit Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Maggie Dawn.
Hey, everybody. The DNC is over, and I'm taking a breather. Don't worry. I got you covered. Special guest host Matt Rothschild is up next.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
From Altoona all the way to Algoma, from Bayfield to Broadhead. Wyawega to Waukesha, this is the Todd Albaugh Show. I am not Todd Albaugh. I'm your special guest host, since special guests are something, and rumors of them are something that are quite popular these days. Trygve Olsen, you usually hear me on Wednesdays. I am lucky because I have Mr. Zommers, the best in the business, on the board co-piloting this operation today. So, Mr. Zommers, what's your take on the last week?
It has been a wild ride. And comparing it, since I helped work on our coverage for the RNC and the DNC, and the difference could not be more stark in terms of production value, in terms of speech quality, in terms of excitement from the crowd. It was just night and day.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see the difference. And, you know, I was thinking back. I've been obviously to a lot of Republican conventions, much like Adam Kinzinger saying he never really expected to be at a Democratic convention. I never really had expected that either. I'm glad I was there with civic media. It's interesting to be on that side of the equation. But there was a level of energy at that convention that I think Democrats have to be excited about. But beyond that, what really I found fascinating about the convention was that it reminded me of 2004, when Republicans had a bunch of Democrats, Joe Lieberman, among others, who came and spoke at their convention. And that convention, it looked like America today. And it was filled with so much optimism and so much patriotism, and we'll get into it today on the show. We're going to break down Adam Kinzinger's speech. We're going to be joined by my colleague and good friend, Reed Galen, who has played, you know, senior roles in advance and in doing conventions, so we'll get his take. And then we may have a special guest calling in, Mr. Zommers.
Oh, we
in
may.
The second hour. We may. We may. Now, I could hype this. Is it Beyonce? Is it W? Is it Taylor Swift? Man, it would be something if it was Taylor Swift. No one would remember I hosted the show. It'd all be about, can you believe Taylor Swift was on the Todd Albaugh Show? But we
is
don't
it
know.
Mitt Romney? Probably not. Only he said it's only not him.
Mitt Romney has already said it's not him. That's true. And I have it on good authority that President Bush was up painting in Maine. So, but we have a lot to get to today. And then I want to have a little bit of a conversation at one point about decency in our politics, because we have been seeing a lot of a lacking, particularly on the right, as it seems to be melting down for them. So we're going to get into that, and we're going to take your calls because, quite frankly, when I'm driving the ship, unlike Todd, I am not the most experienced captain. So not only am I going to have to rely on Mr. Zomers, I'm going to have to rely on all of you calling in and helping carry the boat into the harbor today. So you can call us at 855-752-4842. Obviously, we have people listening all across the great state of Wisconsin. Hopefully, we have lots of people listening outside of the great state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio app. So let's get into some of what we saw last night. One of the things that jumped out at me, and Mr. Zomers, I'd be interested in your take on this. You know, there sometimes when you're in a lieutenant governor's job or you're in the vice presidency, right? You're the second fiddle. You're the pass catching tight end. You're not the quarterback who's getting all of the attention. And oftentimes there's a tendency to underestimate, right? Those. I think Harris exceeded expectations with her speech at a, you know, it wasn't just a speech, though, that exceeded expectations. It was a really good speech.
I would definitely agree. I thought that she really addressed a lot of people's concerns. She had the whole poorer upbringing that she brought up. She had her career and her drive of justice for people and a lot of personal stories that I think really connected with people. And I think the whole thing was just formatted really well. It was all in a logical order. It all clearly people connected with it in the room. And I think a lot of people watching did as well.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, I felt like, and I've seen this through my work, you know, those who listen on Wednesdays when I'm on know that I grew up in Western Wisconsin, River Falls, still consider that home. My favorite place in the world is crossing the St. Croix River, the bridge over the St. Croix River. But I had the opportunity to travel around the world and work with those fighting for democracy. And I have seen in many places where democracy has taken hold and autocratic actors, which I view Donald Trump as an autocratic actor, where they have fallen. It is typically because leaders meet the moment, right? Like that is what I have learned. And what we saw with Vice President Harris last night was a person meeting the moment and inspiring millions and millions of people. And she was doing it by talking about really core pieces of what we and how we as Americans see ourselves. And it wasn't what we saw in Milwaukee, which was just a litany of grievance about how badly, you know, people were supposedly being treated. It was optimistic. It was a contrast. It was well-constructed, certainly, and well-delivered. But I think at the end of the day, it was somebody who was standing on that stage appealing to our better angels and getting people to understand that it's not just about a person, right? America is not about who our leader is. It's about the idea and having leaders who are willing to stand up and defend that idea. And that's what we saw last night. And I can tell you from my work around the world, when you have that kind of moment where a critical mass is met, we began to see people starting to, you know, attach themselves to it, become energized by it. They start to understand, I'm not the only one who feels this way. If you're a Republican, you say, you know what? I agree with Adam, what Anna Kinzinger was saying, and I agree with what Vice President Harris was saying. And I like Tim Walz because I see a little bit of myself in him. And you say, I want to stand for that. It's not just, oh, poor me. So let's do this, Mr. Zomer. Let's start off with Tom from L.A., because I like talking to people from Durand, even if they're transplanted in L.A. And then we'll go to the break. Tom, you're there.
Hey, Trigby. I need to know what your Twitter handle is as well. But yeah, you know, I did actually go to college my first 2 years at RF and played for the Falcons, and then yep. I went over to St. Norbert and played for the Knights. But anyway, I wanted to say that it's pretty amazing when Bill Clinton got up there and he said that 51 million jobs since 1989, that 50 right. million of those jobs were created by Democratic presidents and 1 million were created by Republican presidents. So I just find mm-hmm. that so absolutely astounding and such an incredible statistic that people really need to take to heart. And then also I have a question for you. When is it that the Republican Party became such victims? I mean, victimization and being a victim is probably one of my biggest pet peeves. In fact, you'll see that on my Twitter handle, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. And victim about everything. Like you said, grievance. I'm a victim. Oh, my God, the government did this to me. Oh, they did that to me. It's like, really? How about you take yeah. personal responsibility and take it on yourself?
So I think
one more question.
That's a great question. How about I answer that one and then I'll take your second one. You know, Tom, you've gotten a chance. You grew up in Durand and then you live in LA, right? And when you get outside of Wisconsin, but then you go back and you see, I think the Republican Party really, you know, it's hard to say. Was it 94? Was it 2008? Like, these things just don't happen overnight, right? But when you go, when you have a chance, when you're from Wisconsin and you have a chance to live some other places, you kind of get to see it more clearly because you have your friends back home who've sort of succumbed to that. And really, you know, this assumption that people in other places are spending a lot of time thinking about what can I do to offend or undermine the values or disrupt the lives of people in other places, what you find when you live in other places is people are mostly concerned about raising their kids, about having a job and focused on those kinds of things. And for some reason, you know, the Republican Party and the conservative movement has decided that the better way is to make people afraid of other people rather than having faith in them and recognizing that we're all in this together. And so I think that's part of it. I, you know, maybe 2010, Obamacare and the Tea Party is where it really went awry. But there's no doubt. It's grievance and it's vilify.
It seems to me like it went awry around the time of Newt Gingrich in terms of really, you know, the whole Clinton thing and trying to divide us right there down the middle. Also, I did want to ask you this question, though, because when I go back mm-hmm. to Wisconsin, which I'm going next week, and flying into Minneapolis, and then, of course, going to Durand, I noticed that Hudson and pretty much River Falls, I mean, it's almost a part of Minnesota. And
totally.
My question would be to you is Hudson used to be a very, very Republican area. Has it mm-hmm. become because they can see all the good that Tim Walz has done in Minnesota that those people are starting to go, wow, I kind of like what's going on in Minnesota. And, you know, Scott Walker was all about divide and conquer and all of this. Do you think that those areas may be getting more of a clue and want to vote more Democratic? Or
so we got to go to a break, Tom, but I'll answer that on the other side. This is the Todd Abba Show on Civic Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
It all starts with a question more than 75 years ago. Can hauling a fishing pole to the water hole be made easier? Bob and Bill Johnson find an answer, and the very first multi-section bamboo fishing pole is created. It's 1948. The brothers' invention also leads to the launch of St. Croix Rod Company in Park Falls, and it becomes the talk of the state. So do you know which fish is considered the prize catch in Wisconsin? Is it northern pike, bluegill, or walleye? The answer coming up. The St. Croix Rod Company continues to call Park Falls home, but now operates what is considered the most advanced facility in the country. The company offers more than 800 award-winning rods and reels, still being created as the answer to every angler's fishing question. So which fish is the prized catch? Walleye.
Yeah.
It's challenging to catch, delicious to eat. And this is not the one that got away, but is one true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Buck.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back to the Todd Aubaugh Show from Abbotsford to Algoma and all across the state of Wisconsin and from Bayfield to Baghdad on the Civic Media Radio app. No matter where you are, you can listen to the Todd Aubaugh Show. I am not Todd Aubaugh. I am Trygve Olsen, regular guest on Wednesdays and the special guest. Well, actually, I'm not the special guest today. I'm the special host today, joined by Mr. Aaron Zomers on the board. Before we get to our guest, Reed Galen, who is a long, long, long time friend of mine. Somehow we keep becoming longer and longer friends, Reed, which probably beats the alternative. Right. I want to answer Tom's other questions. So we had LA Tom asked about Hudson and River Falls, which for those of you who listen regularly, you know that the bridge over the St. Croix River is literally my favorite place in the world, 72 countries, and I love the bridge over the St. Croix River because I grew up in River Falls. He was asking about the politics of that part of the state. Yes, Tom, it has started to trend more independent, and I would say, you know, Hudson used to be a 60-40 split for Republicans. It has more consistently been 55-45. And quite honestly, I would not be surprised, and I might be going out on a limb here, that Tammy Baldwin might win Hudson, and that certainly might win, will win St. Croix County. And I think Harrison Walls actually can too, because Tim Walls is from there. So that's that answer to that question. We are now joined by, as I said, my longtime friend, Reed Galen. Reed and I have been through many battles, a few with each other and mostly with others, which is the way it goes in politics. Reed is helped found the Lincoln Project. He is now moved over and is working extensively with the union, which is a group of grassroots activists and organizations from both sides all across the state. They have a robust group here in Wisconsin. And I'm really excited to have you on, Reed, because, quite frankly, we've had a lot of conversations over the last week during the Democratic Convention about the blocking and tackling. You'd be amazed at how many listeners call in and want to know about the blocking and tackling. You've done that. I think you were under the convention floor. Literally, you guys built a floor in Madison Square Garden. You were probably down underneath the delegates. Tell us a little bit about what goes into conventions and, you know, all the advanced side, and talk a little bit about that for listeners. And then we'll get into some other stuff.
Sure. And first and foremost, thanks, Trygve, for having me. And great to see you and Todd last week in Chicago, or this week in Chicago. Yeah. Gosh, it's moving fast. I'm unique probably in many ways. I did my first convention when I was 16. I was the 1992 Republican convention in Houston for then George H.W. Bush. I was a driver. They gave me a station wagon that was about 984 feet long. And it was so beat up by the time I got done with it, I don't think they could give it back to General Motors. But, you know, I spent 3 months in Philadelphia for the 2000 George W. Bush convention. And yeah, that's one of those where, you know, you do a lot of this planning, you do a lot of the meetings, but you have to remember that, you know, whether or not it was the United Center that we saw this week or the Fiserv Center there in Milwaukee, that these arenas are all being used right up until the moment that you have to start the build out. And so it takes, you know, about a year before the convention, whichever side it is, they announce what's called a committee on arrangements. So those are the people that are going to move to the city. They're going to raise money for it. They're going to coordinate with the locals. You know, eventually there'll be Secret Service and local law enforcement, people who are going to be donors, who's going to pay for this stuff. And then right as you have a, what they call a presumptive nominee, right, Trig, when you know who's going to be the nominee of that party, then the campaigns people actually show up. And that's what I did for George W. in 2000. So we showed up 3 months before, you know, he actually took the stage. And again, it's a lot of preparation, a lot of hurry up and wait. And then all of a sudden you go into this panic about 10 days out as you have to build out all the stuff everybody saw this past week.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that listeners who watch the convention, right, the people who actually are overseeing the what happens, and everything is literally down to the second, unless you let Bill Clinton on a stage, because then he just keeps speaking. But
it was funny with the people I were with when we recognized that he had gone off script, and not only had he gone off script, he had done it on purpose, and that he had a different speech that was in front of him than the one that he'd given to the teleprompter people.
Right. Well, and that he'd probably given to Stephanie Cutter, who was overseeing all things, like what the optics were. You and I both know Stephanie. She probably was standing at the side of the stage, and he may be a former president of the United States, but I think if she didn't needed to walk out there and take him off the stage, she might have done that. But I think you know, that's one point I was going to make is, you know, so people like Stephanie, there are those on the Republican side, people like our friend Jeff, who really have specialized in that. It's a real specialized skill. I think Stephanie and her team did an amazing job with what you saw there. And that doesn't surprise me because she's amazing, but like it was really good.
But I think I think it's important to understand too, or at least for me to explain to everybody, is how much more incredible it was given the fact that Trigby, you know, they had to do it on basically 3 or 4 weeks notice, which meant they had to totally redesign it. They had to scrap whatever speaking slots there were for the most part. They had to rewrite everybody's speech. Anybody who went up on that stage, their speech was either they wrote it and it was approved or it was written for them. All that had to be redone. And I would venture to say that Lil Jon coming out during the Georgia roll call was not probably part of a Joe Biden convention, right? So all of that stuff had to be done. Right. On, you know, very short notice. And I think just as an objective observer, an old advanced man, I was blown away by what a good job they did and what a good show they put on.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, the other thing that a lot of people were asking me about, reporters and other people, you know, because it's, listeners might find this interesting, you know, reporters are fascinated by the, like most people who care about politics, fascinated by about the minutia and wanting to understand what's going on behind the scenes. You know, when you do the convention and Reed sat through these meetings, then you have like the Secret Service and the police, and they're all giving you their update, and you don't really have an opinion on that because it's not necessarily your thing. But I will say, like, is with all the excitement, and that place last night was packed to the rafters. I heard the fire marshal finally just gave up. The security around it was so good. Things moved, flowed, like, I mean, it was really the only beef that I have with them is that they apparently the Democrats were trying to starve the media. Now, I've never been at a convention as part of the media like I was at this one, but they didn't really have much food in the media area. You had to go out to these food trucks and even that wasn't that good, which, you know, it's funny because Republicans, for all their griping about the media, honest to God, the media gets like a buffet at Republican
conventions. Oh, yeah. No, and just even not just on the at the conventions, Trigby, but when we used to carry a full press corps with the president or a presidential nominee, and we had buses and filing centers with with phone lines and all this stuff, right? And cable television. You had to feed them and feed them well, because a hungry press corps was an angry press corps.
Totally. Well, we will be back on the next side with Reed Galen. We're going to talk a little bit about Jay Weber and his tweet. You have a viral thing about that and his attack on Gus Walls. So stay tuned. This is the Todd Aubaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. You can always continue the conversation on social media
Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Over the last few months, there's been an uptick in four-wheel drive tractor sales. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Kurt Blades, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers Senior Vice President of Industry Sectors and Product Leadership, is here giving some of the numbers of what this increase in sales looks like.
Well, for the last couple of months, we've actually been seeing some strength in the articulated four-wheel drive market in both the United States and Canada. In fact, according to our July Ag Tractor and Combine report, we're looking at about a 5% increase in articulated four-wheel drives year-to-date in the U.S. and about 17% increase in Canada.
Kurt Blades joining us to tell us what the increase in sales looks like percentage-wise. I'm Ben Jarbo with Midwest Farm Report, and your midday markets are coming up right after this.
All right, team, pay attention to this game film about Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans. See here? When dairy farms grow Plenish soybeans for their cows,
they have lower overall feed costs.
Good eye, Jake.
And they maximize milk fat production.
So they increase the return on their investment.
Well, let that be a lesson to you. For lower feed costs and higher milk fat and dairy cows, what do we plant?
Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans.
Learn more at pioneer.com/happycows.
There goes Pam Yonke across Wisconsin in her suburban truck. Thanks to Zimbrick Chevrolet, Dane County's number one volume Chevy dealer with over 70 new Chevy trucks to choose from. Zimbrick Chevrolet East Madison, Sun Prairie, and ZimbrickChevrolet.com. Be sure to keep up with Pam and her travels at MidwestFarmReport.com and on Facebook at Midwest Farm Report, on Instagram at MWF Report, or by downloading the Midwest Farm Report app.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with Midwest Farm Report. And before we go any further, remember to follow along with us on all things agriculture by downloading our app, The Farm. You can download it on your app store, or you can go to our website at thefarmwi.com. Now for your midday markets from Chicago. September corn contracts are at 370 and three quarters, down three quarters. December corn contracts are at 393, down a half. September soybean contracts are at 952 and a half, up 11 and a quarter. November soybean contracts are at 973 and a quarter, up 11 and three quarters. September wheat is at 507 and three quarters, down three and a quarter. September Class 3 milk contracts are at 21.94 hundredweight, down 4 cents. And October Class 3 milk contracts are at 22.31 hundredweight, up 12 cents. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Scattered showers and a few thunderstorms are still expected to track across the area today. Staying stuck under mostly cloudy skies, high temperatures will still be pleasant in the upper 70s. Otherwise, a mostly sunny, hot, and humid weekend ahead. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 67 degrees.
With a little financial support from the Wisconsin Chairs Child Care Subsidy Program, more is possible. You can focus on work, continue your education, and take advantage of opportunities that make your family stronger. Best of all, you can give your child a great start with the high-quality care they deserve. What's your more? Learn how you can get help paying for childcare by visiting wishares.wi.gov today.
Don't let spring allergies make you miserable. Try the quick drug-free solution trusted by over 4 million people, Navage. Only Navage uses suction to flush out your sinuses using refreshing saline, helping you breathe easier, sleep better, and feel healthier. And here's even better news. Navage is now available at your local Sam's Club in a great new value pack. It's everything you need to start breathing better fast. Check out Navage at your local Sam's Club today. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E. Breathe easy.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Angela Lang, the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, is my guest host for the day. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Well, I went down to the local arena, asked to see the manager man.
live across the state of Wisconsin, from Douglas County to Door County, all the way down to Janesville, where the Jets play. And if Bill McCoshin, I know we had you on Wednesday, but if you're listening, I do want to drive the Zamboni at a Jets game. In fact, when Todd and I do a tour across the state, if you could figure out how to make that happen, although probably not during a game, because I might send it right through the boards, which really wouldn't be good for you or me. I am joined. I am Trygve Olsen. This is the Todd Allbaugh Show. Todd is at an undisclosed location. Actually, he's cleaning up after the convention. I am joined today by Reed Galen, my colleague, who now is central to the union. The union is an organization that comprises, really, I think it comprises the best of what American democracy should be. It's got right-wing groups. It's got left-wing groups. It's got conservative Americans. It has progressive liberal Americans. It is comprised of people who care about democracy. And we... Sorry about that. I got a phone call and it started ringing in my headphones. And we are talking a little bit about the Republican convention that just happened. I want to talk about, Reed had a tweet today that went completely viral about Jay Weber, who is on one of the other stations. And I want to talk about that. But before I do, let's go to Jean in Eau Claire so that we can get her take on what she saw. Jean in Eau Claire, are you there?
Yes, I am. I wanted to quick call while you guys were together here, because I want to thank you for the Lincoln Project. You guys are my heroes, because I've been an independent my entire life, and I was watching and documenting and seeing what was been going on in our country for quite a while here, and you guys were like a breath of fresh air coming out, seeing what was going on, fighting for democracy, and I want to thank you so much, and I hope everybody checks out the Lincoln Project and this new union. I'm anxious to hear about it. So thank you guys for all the work you do, and keep it up, because we need you guys. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Gene. Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, Gene, one thing you should know is that a lot of people, like when we started the Lincoln Project and it sort of took off, people are like, oh, you guys are so down the middle. And we said, that's not at all what we are. We're not a issue organization. We weren't a policy organization. We're a political organization. But Trig is really based in belief, right? That American 100%. Democracy is the most important thing. And that's what matters. And, you know, with now the union, which you can go jointheunion.us, that's jointheunion.us. It's the same thing, which is, you know, we have groups that care about particular issues. We have individuals, 50,000 of them across the country, who care about individual issues. But the thing that they agree on most is one thing, right? The one thing is most important compared to all the others, which is American democracy has to go, continue, grow, expand, repair. Right. We have a lot of work to do. And so what I would say is this is to Gene is and to everybody else out there. I think what really resonated, Trig, was the idea that like we came out and we said, this is what we're about. Right. We're not about anything else. We're about this one thing. You know, I feel a heck of a lot better now, Trig, than I did, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago about the ability to beat Donald Trump. And when we do that, we've got a lot of work to do. But again, I think that there are a lot more people who agree with us on a lot more things. But again, if we keep the greatness of the United States and what democracy can and should do for every individual, I think that we're going to win in the long run.
Yeah. And, you know, democracy requires vigilance. And I say this a lot, you know, and you and I have talked about it on your podcast and in the past. The reality is, you know, every generation of Americans has faced a challenge, right? And, you know, for some, it required boys to run off onto beaches in France. And for some, it required, you know, Abraham Lincoln standing up and doing what he did, Ronald Reagan, the Cold War. This is our generation's challenge of Americans. And I think really at the convention more than anything else and watching the response to it, I was struck. And, I, you know, like I say, in the second hour, we're going to break down Kinzinger's speech. But It's a lot of people coming together and saying, you know what, we're not alone. There's lots of people who feel this way. And, you know, I think about the first conversations, Reed, you and I had in 2019. You called me in the summer and I was getting ready to go to Lithuania. And you said, listen, we got to stand up and do something. And I remember thinking, well, that's awesome, Reed, but what if we're the only two guys who feel that way? Like, but at least we can look our daughters in the eye, right? And, you know, those moments when people start to see, and I think the convention was one of those moments, is when democracy is becoming reborn. And as much as Trump is an awful thing for America to go through, we have the ability to come out of this stronger. So let's talk to that end, though.
And knowing how close we came, right?
100%, 100%. And the people, you know, Nancy Pelosi did what she did. It's interesting to me because one of the points that you make, somebody else made this on Twitter recently, is like, you know, the people that have skin in the game, if Donald Trump comes back, and I mean, all of us have had conversations, where do we go if Trump comes back, right? It's interesting to me, Nancy Pelosi is somebody who has a lot of skin in the game because Donald Trump he sent a mob to kill her. So there's that. But she has a lot of skin in the game.
And then another man came to kill her and almost killed her husband.
Right, exactly. And but she's going to do whatever it takes. And she will be judged incredibly favorably by history for that. But I want to talk about somebody who's probably not going to be as judged as favorably by history, who's on another radio network during the same time that Todd and I are on. Jay Weber, WISN. He had a tweet, and actually you caught it early on Twitter, and your tweet blew up, right? Like Adam Kinzinger, all these people have retweeted your tweet. But I want to touch on what Jay Weber said. Now, in fairness to Jay Weber, he has apologized, but I assume he's apologizing because he got yanked off the air and the response to him has been so bad. But he tweeted about Gus Walls, who is Tim Walls' son, who has some disabilities. Sorry, but this is an embarrassment for both the father and son. If the Wallses represent today's, if Walls represents today's American male, this country is screwed. Meet Gus. He's a blabbering bitch boy. His mother and I are so very proud. Literally, he tweeted that. Now, why WISN is only giving him a break just because he apologized and he feels bad about it, that's a real question. But we don't even need to talk about that. What I want to talk with you about, Reed, talk about why you retweeted it and why you think that it's, I mean, literally it's gotten tens of thousands of retweets and likes. Tell us why. What is it about that, do you think, that people understood?
You know, I think it's this comes down to a couple of things. One is, you know, so many of us do have children. And if you could imagine a situation in which your child, who is dealing with something not of their making, right, for whom you have all the love in the world, you know, expresses this incredible blossom of pride and positive emotion in his dad, right? And Tim Walls is a crier too. And let me just tell you, in that moment, Trigby, I don't know about you, but the people I was with, there was not a dry eye. We were all ugly crying at that moment, right? Because his emotion touched everybody in that arena that night. And I think it just goes to show you too that, you know, there is no line for these people. There is no bottom they won't find. There's no trolling they won't troll. There's no bridge they won't live underneath. And to me, it just speaks to what I like to say is the table, the American table, which is, do you want to sit at the table with a guy like Jay Weber, who he thought he was being funny? He thought that was, you know, something that was really clever, making fun of a kid. Now, even if young Jay Walls wasn't dealing with ADHD and some nonverbal cognitive stuff, why would you do it? Why would you do that? And I would venture to say this is that, and I wrote about this, you know, last night as I was flying home, is that the ability to show emotion, a man's ability to show emotion, is not weakness. It is strength. The willingness and ability to be vulnerable comes from a place of strength, not weakness. It says that I know who I am. I'm comfortable with who I am. And yes, I love my family and I'm willing to tell everybody about it. And I hope, you know, once in a while, Trig, because, you know, we have daughters, that our kids love us as much as Jay loved his dad in that moment. 100%. Right. And so to me, the Jay Webbers and the Ann Coulters and the Dinesh D'Souzas of the world. Listen, if we have Republicans out there and you're uncomfortable with a Kamala Harris because of policy or whatever it is you choose, like, just ask yourself, do you want to sit at the table with them? Because it starts with Donald Trump, who, remember, famously or infamously, Trigby, made fun of a disabled New York Times reporter years ago that should have, frankly, ended his campaign at that moment. And it didn't. And we're dealing with the downstream effects of that now. And so from my perspective, decency does matter. Character does count. And I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry. But Jay Webber, the likes of him and MAGA and Trump, they got none of it. And they don't deserve anything from anybody.
So I want to go read. We have a regular caller, Wisco Paul, who's on the line, and he wants to talk about Jay Webber. So let's go to Wisco Paul. Wisco Paul, you have a question for Reed Galen about Jay Webber.
Well, yeah, he should never be behind a microphone again, but they'll find some other they'll find some other guy, you know, to replace him. That'll be, I don't know if he could be as bad as that comment. That's really sad. And he should never, you know, like I said, he should never be behind a mic again, but he will be. I want to thank the Lincoln Project also, what Jeannie said. I don't know without you guys if Biden would have beat Trump. But I think what you guys did was very, very helpful. And I can see why Republicans won quite often when you guys were doing stuff for them. It's amazing what you do. And I want to thank you for that. I think, you know, I can remember when the hate for Pelosi was so intense. And it was so intense that I don't know if that started it, but a guy took a hammer into her husband's house and tried to beat her to death. And I don't know if it was Weber or who said it, but they were singing If I Had a Hammer. Now, this is when I really part ways with the megas, or whatever you want to call them, is the violence that comes out of their mouth on a daily basis. We just shouldn't have that in a political arena. Well, anyway, thanks for what you guys do. I really appreciate it. And you guys have a great weekend.
Thanks for calling in, and thanks for making a great point.
Thanks, Paul.
Here's the thing I would say about it, though, too, Reed, and I think you and I share this. I would be equally offended if some knucklehead were to make that kind of comment about Barron Trump, right? Like, if you're an 18-year-old kid or less and your parents are in politics, you should not have to put up with that. If you're the Bush daughters, you're Chelsea Clinton, like the Obama daughters, you should not have to put up with that. That said, you know, if you're Don Jr. or you're Eric Trump or you're an adult kid who's out putting themselves in the arena, that's a different deal, right? Like, that's if they decide to get in. But there has to be more civility. And I just think, you know, I think what Jay Webber, he's probably a decent guy. He's a teacher. I would assume he's okay. But you make that kind of comment, they're just looking for outrage because that's what sells, right? On the right today, what sells is outrage. What we saw last night.
Yeah, and you can see it too. Megan, and with Megyn Kelly throughout the week, right, just going out and saying the most ugly, outrageous things, right, simply because, you know, they're desperate for attention, right? They're just desperate for attention. And, I mean, think about, Trigby, the idea that you're so desperate for attention, you'll say the most awful things that come to your mind or tune them up to be worse so that you know that even if the attention you're getting is negative, at least you're getting attention. That is a broken personality. I'm sure Mr. Webber, I hope Mr. Webber regrets what he did. I hope he does suffer some consequences. And that's the other part too, for our Democratic friends, right? Like, you don't have to put up with this. Actions have consequences, and I hope Jay Webber faces some.
This is the Todd Aubaugh Show. I'm your guest host, Trigvi Olsen, with Reed Galen. Stay tuned for more after the break.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake.
Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Let's go to Lynn from Oconomowoc.
I met Kamala, and she's super intelligent. She will select people who are competent in their field.
So, Sandy, you don't hear those words when it comes to the other guy.
Well, he's going to select loyal people. Project 2025 seems to diminish the notion that there needs to be competence in government.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
From Chippewa Falls to Cudahy, from Milwaukee to Madison, this is the Todd Albaugh Show on Civic Media. And if you're on the app anywhere in the world, you can be listening. And hopefully there's lots of you around the country tuning in to find out what's going on in Wisconsin, because as Wisconsin goes, so goes the nation. We are joined by Reed Galen. We have a number of callers, people who have been calling in. If you want to join the conversation, you can do that by dialing 855-752-4842. I want to go to Joe in Madison, who's been holding on for a bit. Joe in Madison, you're on the air with the Todd Albaugh Show, but you got Trigvi and Reed today with Mr. Zomers.
Great. Absolutely wonderful. I wanted to talk to you too. In the understanding that you have worked on campaigns many, many years, and the previous discussion about the terrible things that were said about Gus Walz, very interesting, because it kind of leads into what I want to say, which is about optics. And I don't know whether the man out of Milwaukee who made those terrible remarks is a decent person or not, but I can tell you he's not a smart person. Because a smart person knows that you leave that stuff alone. You know, you just don't get near it. And that leads to what I want to talk about, which is, I think there were some very smart moves on the part of Kamala's campaign here and the Democratic campaign. And I'd be interested in hearing you guys rip about this. And what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and I'm interested in hearing what you're going to say about Adam Kinzinger's speech, because I think it was the biggest and the most important speech, maybe even more important than what Michelle Obama had to say, because Kinzinger was using words that have a visual side to them. He was describing Trump as, quote, weak. That creates a picture. And he led into Vice President Harris. And within the, I'd love to hear what you have to think about this, because I think they really shaped that speech in a way that created visual pictures. They used visuals, of course, but they created visual pictures. She wanted to say, 100%. I am like you. I was a middle-class kid. And she describes it. She describes, I lived in the Bay Area, and she said, we didn't live in the Highlands. We lived in the Flatlands. And she used the nickname, the Flats. Okay, that says that's their neighborhood. That's how they describe themselves. She knows that her mother was, the pictures that you have of her mom, she's Indian and she's wearing a sari. Oh, is she really an American? Well, she did things that were really great in terms of humanizing and helping us understand her mother. She said, my mom was 5 foot tall. Why was that an important thing to say? Well, it was important because it helps give a picture of the mom, this small woman who was going to be forthright about pushing her daughters to success in the American way, in the middle class way. She also referred to, at one point, she specifically said, we were middle class. And the next line out of her mouth was, my mom had a budget. I thought that was fascinating, because that is the middle class. Your money is limited. You know, you got to decide what you're going to spend it on.
Right.
And I thought that was, again, a very visual way of saying it. And then when she spoke about her career as a prosecutor, she spoke of her friend who had been subject to abuse by her father. We had a picture, we had a narrative there, and that prompted her to become a prosecutor. And then she had that wonderful line where she said, I spoke, and what I said was, Kamala Harris for the people. It was like Law and Order, and people have had 20 plus years of Law and Order. And within Law and Order, that TV show, they have plenty of pictures of women who are in solid, strong roles and winning cases and basically being right. successful. To me, it was artfully done in terms of shaping this idea of she's middle class. She's even though she comes from immigrant home, she is middle class. She's like us. She crawled her way up and she's successful because she took advantage of the opportunities she had, which is America. I thought it was really skillfully done. And I feel that it was really put forward by making it was Kinzinger who said he focused on Trump before she got into her talking about herself. So it was Kinzinger right. who created the picture of Trump, the weak Trump, the not strong, and then she led into her life. So I don't know.
So Joe, what I will do is in the I hope you'll stay tuned to the second hour. I'm going to actually break down Adam's entire speech from the perspective of a former Republican myself. But Reed, to Joe's point, I think what we saw was Democrats finally getting that they needed to build narratives, not just throw policy prescriptions
Correct.
At people.
No, right. Show not tell. I think is always the best part of storytelling. You know, when she mentioned her 5 foot mother, I thought of my 5 foot grandmother, right? Mickey, who was 5 feet of pure fury, right? Like yeah. you didn't get in Mickey's way. She knocked down walls her entire life. And then I think the other part too about, you know, the visual part of this, but one thing that Joe said about the Law and Order piece, Trigvi, and I was thinking about this as I was listening to the speech, and it took me a minute to catch on, is they designed it almost as a summation that a prosecutor, or maybe even an opening statement, maybe that's better,
yeah.
right? An opening argument. Here's who I am for the people. Here are my bona fides, my background. And now I'm going to make the case. I'm going to prosecute the case against my opponent. And I thought she did a fabulous job of it. And I thought that, you know, they did all of the things they needed to do. They tailored the speech to her. But let me just say this. I think that across the speeches this week, you know, that narrative piece that you mentioned, Trigvi, they all did such a good job of understanding how they needed to tell that story, but also the psychological impact of getting inside Donald Trump's head, which, as you and I know, Trigvi, is a strategic imperative in this campaign for the next 70 some days.
Yeah, I think that's 100%. You know, as you were talking, Reed, the one thing, you know, I kind of wonder if you're sitting in that senior, you know, the senior staff meetings of the Harris-Walz campaign, and you're thinking about the convention, you're thinking about the 30 days that they've had that have been pretty remarkable from a political standpoint. You know, I think you're right. I think it was an introduction. I think they were actually viewing it as, all right, we've got 75 days. We're going to kick it off with, here's the introduction. Even though we have those 30 days and she's been vice president for the last 3 years, they really did a nice job of resetting the table. And quite frankly, you know, and they're people we've known for a long time. I'm not sure if you're sitting there with Chris and Susie and now you've got Corey Lewandowski, you're down there in Mar-a-Lago with the Trump campaign. I'm not sure how you deal with it exactly.
Well, I don't think they're dealing with it at all. I think Chris and Susie have either been pushed aside or gone to ground because they've now given the Harris campaign basically five weeks of free air, and they're hoping that Mr. Brainworm's dead bear cub, you know, Bobby Kennedy Jr. will somehow give them a lift. Like I think they're a campaign that's in free fall at the moment, but we shouldn't give them, you know, this guy was also born with a horseshoe up his rear end, so we cannot take the pedal off the metal.
Well, so you know, you and I lived what it many have said is one of the worst campaigns. I can't tell you how miserable they have to be getting up every day. This is the Todd Abbo Show on Civic Media. I hope you'll all join us for the second hour when I'll be breaking down the speech by Adam Kinzinger. Stay through the break, and we will be back on the other side.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Madison Curdfest rep Peter Nickel. Civic Media's Terry Bell gives us a recap of the DNC, and it's a bar band Friday night featuring Max Inc. Radio's Terry Barr.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Who is the toughest billionaire? I'm pretty sure I could take Warren Buffett. He's like 94. Elon Musk is the richest guy in the world. He's got like 200 billion bucks. Then Jeff Bezos.
I don't know how Jeff would fight.
What about Mark Zuckerberg?
No, that guy.
I'll tell you, Bill Gates, he would probably take a dive.
Isn't Michael Jordan a billionaire now?
Okay, I would take Michael Jordan.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.